Welcome to Spirits on Spirits, a podcast where we mix ghost stories with a little liquid courage. I'm Aiden.
And I'm Nate.
And together we'll dive into the eerie, the unexplained, and the downright terrifying, all while enjoying a drink or two. Each episode we'll explore haunted places, ghostly encounters, and paranormal mysteries, pairing them with the perfect cocktail to keep our nerves steady. So grab a glass, turn down the lights, and join us as we sip, shiver, and swap some spine-chilling stories. Because here at Spirits on Spirits, the only thing stronger than the ghosts are our drinks.
What up, translucent troublemakers? Welcome to another episode of Spirits on Spirits, the only podcast on the World Wide Web where we are guaranteed thrills, haunts, and booze at the same time. It's the only one that can guarantee it. Check around, and we're really the only one that does it. So, welcome back. We are so excited to have you back on another episode. We're coming to you live from our studio in Salem, Massachusetts. Aiden, how you doing tonight?
Straight chilling.
Nice. We are excited to bring you another episode. We're excited to bring you some more haunts. We're excited to bring you some more cocktails. And more locations. So, you know, without further ado, let's get into it tonight.
Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Should we just get right into where we're going?
Yeah. I mean, do you have any, like, I almost got hit by a car on my walk here.
Almost became a ghost.
That's pretty much it. That's the only antidote I have. Antecedent. Antidote is like medicine.
Anecdote.
The only anecdote I have is that I almost got hit by a car. So, if you're listening to this, car driver, I hope you stub your toe tonight.
Damn.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I hope your charger stops working.
You're really laying the hammer down.
Mm-hmm. That's how this guy knows I mean business. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to change it up a little bit today.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give you the name of the cocktail.
And ooh.
I'm
going to...
Wait, no. Because you already know where we're going.
I do know where we're going.
So, that wouldn't work.
Well, you could give me the name of the cocktail and I could guess what's in it.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay.
The Yellow Hammer.
When I think hammer, I think Thor's hammer.
Okay.
So Nordic.
Sure.
Nordic is like cold and like ice and Nordic. Is it vodka? Is there vodka in it?
There is.
Ooh, nice. Yellow. And I'm looking at it and it's yellow.
But you didn't see me make it.
I can see it in the glass now, but I didn't see you make it. Yellow.
And it is, in fact, yellow.
It is yellow. It's, like, very yellow.
Yeah.
It's, like, more yellow than, like, a screwdriver or something like that. Because that's, like, orange-ish. No. Orange juice is, like, basically yellow.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I give up.
So you went kind of opposite of what it is? It's more of, like, a tropical drink.
Oh.
So we got 1 ounce each of vodka, white rum, amaretto.
Oh, shit.
And then 2 ounces of orange juice, 4 ounces of pineapple juice. Garnish it with either orange peel or cherry.
I didn't know. So we're going to Birmingham. I didn't know Birmingham had tropical drinks.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
There was a couple of different options, but I chose this one.
Yeah, it sounds fun. It's a nice little.
Looks fun.
It's cold. It'll warm you up a little bit.
Yeah. Nice.
Cool. Yeah. Cool.
So shall we cheers?
Yeah, we should cheers to Birmingham. Cheers to Birmingham.
Cheers.
That was a good cheers. I feel like we kind of skated past it, but to the listeners out there, to the loyal fans of Spirits on Spirits, we're heading to Birmingham, Alabama. Sweet home Alabama.
Sing it to him.
Where the sky is so blue. In Birmingham, we love the governor. Yep. That's all I know.
Nice. So just took the first sip.
Nice. Yeah, give us
the amaretto is very, like, it really, like, takes over the flavor, I think.
Interesting. So what is
it's an almond
liqueur. Well, that's why I'm allergic to it.
It would murder you immediately.
But that's why, like, what does it taste like? Does it taste like almonds?
It tastes kind of like, I mean, it tastes nutty. Like, okay, that's the best word I could do.
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't know what nutty shit tastes like because I can't fucking eat it.
Can't imagine not knowing what nutty shit tastes like.
You know what nut tastes like? Got him.
Oh, man. Salty.
Got you. Does it actually taste salty or are you talking about nut?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, man.
It doesn't actually taste salty. But, yeah, I mean, the fruit juices are very, very prevalent. And then nice. The amaretto really, like...
It pops you.
It pops you.
Pops you in the mouth.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can you taste the rum or vodka?
Not really.
Oh, so that's kind of dangerous then.
Yeah, I mean, I used a bigger glass. I used a tiki glass.
Got you.
I don't know that that's the glass you're supposed to use. Whatever. So I might have put a little bit too much fruit juice in there.
Yeah.
But, you know what? You know what?
Who cares?
It tastes good. That's all that matters.
It looks good. It has like a like very yellow flavor or color.
Yeah, it is very yellow.
Yeah, it's cool.
Very tasty.
Very tasty.
Very nice.
Very nice.
All right. So my location
in Birmingham
is the Old Birmingham Public Library.
Ooh, we haven't. Have we covered a library before?
I don't know.
Might be a Spirits on Spirits
might
first.
Might be a first.
It might be a first. A library.
When I was doing research on like places to go, I was like, oh man, I feel like we've done so many cemeteries.
Yeah, we have.
I feel like we've done so, like I've done a bunch of city halls.
Yeah, a lot of hotels.
A lot of hotels.
Theaters.
I want to get something that's a little bit
off
the beaten path
for
a little
sure.
bit. So we're going to the public library. The place where knowledge is obtained.
It's knowledge is present. Knowledge is there. It's bumping. Knowledge be grinding.
Yeah.
And twerking.
Twerking on
knowledge
everybody
is twerking.
Who's in there.
Yeah. Just getting twerked on by knowledge, dude. That sounds fucking awesome.
All right. Well, the tale of the Old Birmingham Public Library begins in the 1920s when Birmingham was entering its adolescence as a city.
Oh.
Steel mills were roaring. Wealth was rising. And civic pride, the kind measured in grand public buildings, was reaching a fever pitch.
That's cool. 1920, that's a late city.
It is a late city.
That is a late city, especially for the capital. Is that the capital? Yeah, Birmingham's the capital.
Is it?
What is the capital of Alabama?
Montgomery.
Nope.
Not the capital.
Not the capital.
Might be the biggest city.
What's the population of Birmingham, Alabama?
Not what I would have asked, but okay.
200,000. That was in 2020, though. What's the population of Montgomery, Alabama? Very close. Birmingham's 207,000. Montgomery's 206,000. Or no, 200,600 versus 200,700.
Oh.
So as of 2020, there
off
was
by 100 people.
100 people. More in Birmingham than Montgomery.
Wow.
2020, though. So a couple of those people might have. So
nice.
Maybe. Or a couple more people might have. And then.
That's true.
So we don't know.
That's true.
We don't know what the updated number is. But we're curious.
And. But now we know. Not the capital.
Not the capital.
Not the capital.
I feel like my hat looks silly right now.
I was thinking when you were going on that spiel earlier, I was like, I can't take you seriously with that dumbass hat. Leaders wanted a library that would stand not just as a place to check out books, but as a statement that Birmingham had arrived.
Whoa, we've arrived with the books, with the knowledge.
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 construction on the new main library began in 1926 and reached completion in 1927. Architect David O. Wilden, whose fingerprints can be found on many of Birmingham's most iconic buildings, designed it in a style that defied easy categorization. It was part classic revival, part Renaissance revival, part modern, and altogether breathtaking. Tall, symmetrical, lined with detailed stonework, the library radiated a sense of knowledge as cathedral.
Well, that's cool.
Inside, the design becomes even more striking. The muralist Ezra Winter, who is famed for his work in the Library of Congress.
Whoa, the Library of Congress?
They got the guy. What the fuck are you doing? Where did you even get that?
I don't know. It was just on my wrist. I forgot about it.
He has a rubber band on his face.
And my hat pulled down really low.
We really need to get cameras.
I know. I feel like video would be really funny here.
But yeah, he worked on the Library of Congress, and he crafted enormous colorful scenes from mythology, literature, and history across the library building's walls. Diana the Huntress, Don Quixote, King Arthur, these figures loom larger than life, frozen in mid-quest, as if reminding every visitor that knowledge itself is a kind of adventure. It is.
Knowledge is an adventure.
It's these murals, some say, that first made the library feel almost alive. Throughout the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, the library served as the intellectual heart of Birmingham. Students hunched over Daddy wooden tables.
Let's get Daddy, bro.
Archivists tucked away fragile documents beneath. I cannot speak right now.
Dude,
I took one sip of this cocktail and I'm like,
it loosened your mouth real. Reel up
it
with
did,
the,
yeah.
The tropical vibes. Oh, geez. It's contagious. I can't speak either.
Archivists tucked away fragile documents beneath careful fingertips. There we go.
Yeah.
Researchers, scholars, genealogists, authors pored over the collections with an almost devotional reverence. But this was also Alabama in the Joe Jim. Jesus Christ. I cannot talk.
The Joe Crow?
The Joe Crow era.
The Joe Crow.
The Joe Crim.
Joe Crim. Criminy Joe.
This was Alabama in the Jim Crow era, and the library's story is inseparable from the painful racial history of the South. I feel like Birmingham, Alabama was probably like...
not great.
Pretty up there in terms of
mm-hmm.
not great places to live at probably. The time. African Americans were barred from using the main downtown library for decades, directed instead to the Booker T. Washington branch. The injustice of that separation lingered like a shadow across the building's otherwise respectable history, a reminder that even places devoted to knowledge are not automatically devoted to equality.
Shaking my head.
SMH.
SM frickin' H, dude.
But still the library grew. Generations of Birmingham residents loved it, and thousands of children took their first steps into a world of books beneath its ornate ceilings. By the 1970s, however, the city had outgrown it. A newer, larger library was needed to house the rapidly expanding collections and serve the growing population. In 1984, the main branch moved across the street into a modern facility. The old building, then nearly 60 years old, was rebranded as the Lynn Henley Research Library and repurposed for archives, government documents, and special collections. It was quieter, more solemn, and more forgotten by the crowds.
See, I have beef with, like, archives and special collections and shit like that. Because libraries will be like, oh, we have this really cool thing. But not let anyone see it ever.
It's archived.
Yeah. You're like, what? Like, that makes no sense. Like, I want to be able to go look and see it and shit.
It's like the PEM allegedly having the skull of Blackbeard.
Yeah, right?
Like,
in the original witch trial documents.
But it's in the vault.
Yes.
No one gets to see it.
No. You're like, why the fuck would that be in the vault? I want to see that shit.
Yeah. But now we'll get into some of the hauntings. So ask a librarian or an archivist who's worked in the building long enough, and they'll tell you that everyone has a story. Some are small, footsteps heard when no one is there, or the feeling of a presence behind them while sorting through old newspapers. Others are more dramatic, bordering on chilling, but nearly all of them involve some consistent themes. So there's the man in the brown suit.
Whoa.
It always starts the same way. A staff member stays late after closing. The building is unusually quiet, the kind of quiet that presses against your ears. As they pass through the first floor, they notice a man seated at a table in one of the reading rooms. He appears completely normal, polite, even unremarkable. He wears a brown suit, somewhat outdated but not unusual for an older patron. He never looks up, never speaks, just reads. But when the staff member approaches to let him know that the building is closed, he's gone. Not walked away, gone. Just vanished. He's been seen for decades by dozens of people.
Shit, so mad people have seen him.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's like the same story over and over again of, like, he's just reading, you approach him, and he's gone.
That's crazy. Wonder if he died reading.
Probably.
That's crazy.
Some people have speculated that he was once a frequent patron from the mid-20th century. Perhaps someone who found comfort in the quiet warmth of the library and simply decided never to leave. But others think that maybe he isn't reading, but instead waiting, but no one knows for what.
Maybe. What the fuck would he be waiting for?
I don't know. My first thought was like maybe like serial killer, like he's stalking people in the library.
I don't know.
People do that, man.
I feel like he's just chilling, reading and stuff like that. Like, something tells me he's a good old, like, dude, like, who's just reading and stuff.
But if
like
people
that.
Are thinking these nefarious things, then maybe they get creepy vibes from him.
Maybe. Yeah, we would have to know, like, what the vibe people get is.
Yeah. So then there's the murals. So remember that Ezra Winter was the guy who also painted in the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think that his murals are like there's something going on there.
Are we talking portals?
Not portals, no. But like, so it happens especially at night. So the mural of Odysseus seems to be the main culprit, but his eyes are painted with such like vivid intensity that people say that his gaze seems to follow you across the room. It kind of sounds like it's like the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, but we know she's not alive. It just fucking like looks at like it's an optic illusion.
Yeah, but who knows?
Who knows? You're right.
One even said that as she turned off the lights one evening, she felt distinctly as though someone behind her leaned close to her ear and exhaled. But when she spun around, the room was empty, but Odysseus stared at her from down the hall.
That's creepy.
And that's he was creepy. Smiling, so.
That's weird.
Pretty creepy.
So maybe he is haunted. Maybe he is alive in the painting. Maybe it's like Harry Potter.
Yeah, maybe.
Where the paintings are alive.
Yeah. Every old building has a place that people don't like to go. For the library, that place is the basement.
Ooh, a library with a fucking basement, dude.
I feel like every library has a basement, and I feel like it's always the children's section.
That's
like the
fair.
Salem Library has a basement, but it's where the kids go.
Fun fact, I am banned from there.
Too many late fee.
I owe that library like $400.
How is that even possible?
You forget about books for a really long time. The worst part, too, is our producer used to work at the library, and I was like, bro, can you clear my fee? He goes, no, it's against the code. I'm like, what, the code of the elves? Like, what what kind of fucking code? He's like, the librarian code. It's crazy.
Did they take an oath?
Yeah, apparently they take a fucking oath. Insane.
So this basement's not like a spooky dungeon filled with cobwebs. It's actually really clean and orderly. It's filled with records, storage rooms, and climate-controlled areas where rare documents live in comfortable, temperature-stable peace. But something down there feels off. One archivist, who's worked there for over 20 years, shared a story that has become something of a local legend among library employees. Late one evening, she was in the basement reviewing some civil rights era newspapers. The building was locked, and she believed that she was alone. As she flipped through microfilm, she suddenly heard a woman humming.
Oh, shit.
The voice was soft, almost musical, echoing down the long hallway. Thinking another staff member had come in unexpectedly, she called out, "Hello, who's down here?" The humming stopped. She walked toward the sound. The hallway stretched ahead into empty rooms. No other voices, no other footsteps. As she turned back toward her workspace, the humming resumed, much closer. That archivist never worked late alone again.
That's weird. Could you imagine just someone humming and then you go, "Hello," and they're like, "Nothing." You're like, "Fuck you." I'd be so mad at that ghost. Just tell, like, prove to me you're a ghost. Just be like, "I'm a ghost," or something like that.
Yeah, they're going to do that.
They should. They have a code of ghosts, the same way librarians have a code.
That's true. They take the ghostly oath.
They take the ghostly oath. Ghostly ghosts.
They need to uphold their ghostly oath.
Mm-hmm. You can call corporate on them.
Yeah. Could call HR.
Yep.
Haunted resources.
That's a good one. That is a great one.
So we've had the woman in white. We've had the woman in black. We've had the woman in red. This time we're the woman in green.
Whoa. Never heard of a woman in green. This is a Spirits on Spirits first. What
we've
the
got,
fuck?
We got dose of those.
We
today.
Got doses and mimosas, broski.
Oh, kind of true.
Yeah, kind of true.
So unlike the man in the brown suit, who seems harmless and gentle, the woman in green carries a very different energy. She's seen most often on the second floor, drifting past the windows of the reading rooms or standing just for a moment in the doorway of the archives. Her dress is old-fashioned, possibly from the 1930s or 40s. It's emerald-colored with flowing sleeves and a cinched waist. Witnesses describe her as beautiful but deeply sad, with dark hair swept into soft curls. And then there's the smell. Whenever she appears, librarians say that the unmistakable scent of lavender and cigarette smoke fill the air.
Oh, that's an interesting combination.
Yeah. She liked to wear lavender perfume and she liked to smoke cigs.
She just was ripping
cigs.
Ripping cigs.
No one has been able to trace who she might have been, but theories have been created. So some believe that she was a patron from decades ago, maybe a woman who used the library as a refuge during difficult times. One rumor suggests that she may have been connected to Birmingham's turbulent civil rights history, but without evidence, that remains just speculation. Then there are, like, invisible hands in the library. So, it's obviously the library is full of paper, and paper makes noise.
Yeah.
Rustling, shuffling, whatever. When the building is full of patrons, such sounds blend together into, like, normal library sounds. But when the building is empty, different rules apply. Dozens of employees have reported hearing pages turning in rooms where no books are open. Others swear that they've heard books fall, loud thuds that echo, only to find every book in perfect place. In one particularly unsettling story, an assistant librarian claimed that as she worked alone at a desk late one evening, the pages of the ledger book beside her began flipping rapidly on their own. Not fluttering in a breeze, but just flipping deliberately, as though an invisible hand was skimming through them in a hurry. She quietly closed the book, it opened itself again, and she left immediately.
Jeez.
That is the library.
So, what do you think? Haunted or not?
I kind of like the idea of the woman in green, so I'm going to go haunted.
Yeah.
I'll as we did in the last episode, I'm going to rank it on a level of H to D. So, I'm going to go, it's going to get a solid haun for me. H-A-U-N. Just missing the T-E-D.
I'd go haunt.
H-A-U-N-T?
Yeah, I'd give it a T. Yeah, it's definitely, it
it's
sounds,
missing the
ed. Like, it has, it's very southern in the sense where it's, like, beautiful on the outside, but has, like, a little bit of, like, a darkness inside of it type thing. And I think that energy traps stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm going hot.
Cool.
I'm going hot.
Have you got a poem for the peeps?
I do.
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, so Aiden, he hasn't heard this one, but I think moving forward, we're going to start to do this where almost like a Mad Lib situation where I told him to give me an occupation. And I think my formula is usually character, occupation, or character, event, or stuff like that. So I'll probably switch it up. And today I went occupation. So it is titled Michael Scott, Coal Miner. Down in the coal mine, helmet on, boots tight, and here comes Michael Scott. Bedazzled hard hat spelling world's best miner, like it is a glitter-based profession. He holds his pickaxe backwards, says, this end is for the vibe, swings it, and obliterates his own lunchbox. Hop pocket scrapnel everywhere. Dwight shows up with a pigeon painted yellow. The canary says danger, Michael whispers. Dwight, everything down here says danger. He takes one heroic step, trips over absolutely nothing, stands up and goes, that was a safety test. You passed. By the end, we mined zero coal, lost three workers, and somehow started a small cave rave. Michael wipes soot off his face and smiles proudly and says, we did it. We made memories. There we go.
I like cave rave.
I like cave rave.
That's fun.
That is fun. I think Dwight with the canary, the pigeon painted yellow is funny too.
Yeah.
So there we go. Cool.
Cool.
That's the poem this week.
All right, well, let's reload, and then we will get on with our second story.
Perfect.
Burbs.
Burbs. All right, so my story this week was fucking crazy. So I'm excited to get into it. So the place that I did was the Sloss Furnace. Did this come up at all in your research?
I did see the name. I did not read anything about it.
It was also called, like, the Sloss Pig Furnace and stuff like that.
Oh.
So I assume, like, had to do with pigs and stuff like that.
Sure.
Does not have anything to do with pigs. So it opened in 1882 as one of the major iron-producing sites in the South. So they were, like, smelting and, like, burning shit down and or melting shit down. And making iron.
Yeah.
Birmingham was nicknamed the Magic City because of how quickly it grew. And Sloss was the heart of that boom. So it's towering stacks, glowing furnaces. Sorry, I can't speak. And endless steam made it look like a metallic hellscape 24/7. So that sounds terrible.
That does sound terrible and terrifying.
And it's just very, like, industrial revolution, just fucking, like, shit going into the air. It's just,
it also kind of sounds like Birmingham, England.
Yeah, a little bit.
Have you ever seen Peaky fucking Blinders?
Peaky fucking Blinders.
Like, that's kind of what I am picturing.
Mm-hmm. So, before I get into, like, the shit going down, I want to get into the working conditions, because...
Can't imagine it's going to be great.
I was going to say, spoiler, not great. So the work was extremely hot. Temperatures around the furnaces could exceed 120 degrees Fahrenheit, even when standing several feet away.
Did people survive this?
So some people did, some people didn't. It was loud. There was roaring fire, steam burst, hammers... Loaders and machinery kind of creaking nonstop noise, like machinery making nonstop noise. And then it was physically brutal. So workers were manually shoveling tons of ore, coke, and limestone all into furnaces and shit like that to melt it down. And then dangerous. So there were slips, falls, burns, explosions, and poisonous gas all were very common.
Sounds fantastic.
Yes.
Can you imagine being like the guy who's like starting this company and be like, dude, I'm going to employ so many people. It's going to be great. There's going to be, like, so much gas, fire, explosions. Mm-hmm. Oh, dude, I can't imagine.
Nope. Oh, it fucking sucked. And that because of that, most workers were immigrant laborers, poor men seeking any job they could get, and then convicted laborers, which was a period of time in the South where they did that, where that was basically slavery. You would go to jail and then be forced to work.
Yeah.
And shit like that. Workers were often treated as disposable. Accidents were rarely investigated. And production was all that mattered. So it sounds like a great vibe was had in
and
this place.
And this is in the 1860s or 80s, you said?
Yeah. 1882 was
when
it opened.
Yeah, so this is before any sort of workers' rights existed.
Anything and stuff like that.
So they could just do whatever the fuck they wanted and say, all right, if you don't want to do it, the next guy will do it.
Yeah. So if you go today, like, even without the legends or the spirits, like, just walking through it, the sloths today feels like stepping inside a giant, rusted, metal relic kind of frozen in time. The echoing metal, the darkness, the catwalks, and the stillness kind of create just a natural eeriness. So, before we even talk about the ghosts and shit like that, this place just feels haunted AF, broski.
Also sounds like you're going to get tetanus immediately.
Oh, like you scrape up against anything.
Don't touch the wall.
Yeah, like don't look at the wall. You will get tetanus looking at the wall.
Yeah.
So the Sloss has believed to been haunted kind of almost since the beginning of its inception. And that is definitely, I think the math adds up on that. So, before I get into it, records aren't perfect, but, you know, surviving documents note many fatal accidents. For example, men falling into the casting pools.
Ah.
Yeah.
So, that's like just like molten.
Molten shit.
Molten metal.
Yeah, molten metal.
Ah.
Falling into the molten metal. Workers overcome by methane gas, collapses and cave-ins in the stoves, explosions that blew apart entire furnace sections. A man was burned alive after slipping into a molten stag, and then multiple workers crushed by machinery or falling debris.
Yeah, I think I'd rather just like go work at a bakery or...
Yeah, just anything, anything.
Anything else.
Death was so common here that the workers often joked with the term that Sloss eats a man a month.
And it probably did.
Probably did. yeah, so there's a lot of shit going down. So the most kind of common apparition is James Slag Wormwood. And he's definitely the furnace's most infamous ghost story. So, Wormwood was a foreman in charge of the graveyard shifts. So, he was one of the people that was in charge of people during the graveyard shift. And to give you a background on Wormwood, he was not a nice guy. He was abusive. He was exploitative. Exploitative. And he was obsessed with production, and he did not give a shit about people's safety at all. So,
now,
great boss.
And now he's Wormwood.
Yes.
Furnace ghost.
Yes. Wormwood furnace ghost. So he would force men to work up on catwalks slick with grease and steam, and or make them get close to the furnace during dangerous pressure spikes.
Okay, I wouldn't want to be like the hated guy in a building full of molten metal and explosions and methane gas. I feel like you're just kind of asking to be pushed in.
Well, so his death in 1906, Slag reportedly fell from the top of furnace number one into a vat of molten iron. He was instantly incinerated. No body left.
I'm gonna air quotes here. Accidentally fell.
Yeah, no. So like the workers claimed that he was pushed. Like there was like, yeah, he fell. No, he didn't.
Yeah.
You know, people finally boiled over and just someone pushed him in.
Can't blame him.
Yeah. Like, could you imagine?
He sounds like the reason that the furnace ate a man a month.
Yeah. No, he sounds like he didn't give a shit if you died or not. And then someone was like, you know what, fuck you, and pushed him in. And, you know, some people covered it up as an accident and shit like that. And then the hauntings began. So after his death, men began refusing the graveyard shift because they heard someone screaming orders. So they'd just be standing there and someone beyond the grave is just yelling at them. Could you imagine being someone who worked underneath him and then he just started haunting? Like, that's the quintessential, like, he, like, you go to push him and he's like, if you fucking push me, I will haunt you till the day you die. And he did. He did.
Yeah. Man of his word.
Man of his word. So, he screaming orders. They would feel invisible hands shoving them. That probably isn't great around this.
I don't want that whatsoever.
They would see a dark figure pacing back and forth on the catwalks, just angry. This man, like, you almost have to respect him to some extent. He was just an angry man all the time.
Yeah.
And he lived like it. He died like it. And he kept it up after death.
Yeah. Never wavered.
Never wavered. It's like that, like, saying of, like, sleep when you're dead. And he's like, no, I'm good. I just, I'm, he's so angry that it fuels
I just want to be an asshole. Still.
Yes, still.
He went down to hell. Yeah. And he was like, you know what, Satan? I need some time.
Yes. He's like, I think I'm better, sir. Yeah. Like, I'm going to stay up there. Tools went missing or were thrown. So tools were just being thrown.
This guy sounds like a real dick.
And then a whistle would blow even when shut off. So, like, he'd be like, get back to work. And they're like, dude, it's still lunch. He's like, I don't give a fuck. He throws your sandwich across the break.
Into the molten metal.
Into the molten metal.
Dude, what the fuck?
Kicks your chair out from underneath you.
Sandwich.
Starts blowing the whistle. Get back to fucking work. And you're like, dude, you're a ghost.
Martha,
like,
made bologna today. Yeah. I was just looking forward to it.
Oh, man. So, yeah. In the 1920s, a night watchman claimed he was shoved so hard he fell downstairs and broke his leg. And swore he saw Slag looming over him. So could you imagine just getting shoved by someone, them standing over you, and then be like, bro, this fucking ghost. Like, the tyrant boss who never clocks out. That's crazy.
What a dick.
What an absolute dick. Like a ghost dick. We haven't really had many of those. We haven't had a ghost shove someone so hard it hurt them.
Like, I'd be so pissed. If I was like, all right, I'm gonna murder this dude because he is miserable to work for, and I don't want to have to deal with him anymore. And then all of a sudden, he's dead, and now I have to deal with him for eternity. Like, there's no way he can get fired now. He's just there.
Yeah. No, you can't do fucking anything about him. So miserable. He's the most famous ghost, but there's some other occurrences. So these are the common ones. Disembodied voices, so people hear men yelling, work orders, clangs and metal shouts, whispers close in their ears, so that one sounds really fun, and then a deep voice yelling, hey, so don't know where that's coming from, but someone's just yelling, hey,
so I'd rather deal with those guys.
Yeah, absolutely, and those often occur in completely empty buildings or catwalks that are inaccessible, so like no one can be up there and stuff like that. We got some shadow figures, so we got tall shadows moving across the furnace platform. So I guess that would make sense where, like, these dudes had to be built to do this job. So, like, all the figures you're seeing are kind of just, like, burly. Yeah. Human-shaped silhouettes that glide instead of walking. Figures peeking around corners. A man in old worker's clothes standing at top of the catwalk. And then lights catching someone who disappears instantly. So those are kind of the shadow figures, and then a decent amount of actually physical contact. So being touched, poked, or having their shirt tugged, feeling a hand on their shoulder, and then being shoved near the casting shed, and then shoestrings being pulled, weirdly enough, and then sudden pressure around the wrist. So some of those are unique. I've never heard the shoestring one and shit like that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And then touches are rarely gentle. So many report them feeling like warnings or demands.
I mean, I feel like it makes sense with the guys that work there.
Yeah.
Nothing's probably gentle in that line of work.
Not at all. Sudden cold spots. So in rooms that trap heat and metal, cold pockets, feel out of place. So ice cold air on their legs, a cold wave passing through them. And then temperatures can drop 20 to 30 degrees in seconds.
Whoa.
Yeah. Those often occur in the powerhouse, the blower building, and tunnels. And then hearing residual machinery sounds, so a hissing steam, gears turning, chains dragging, hammering, the metal squeeze, like brakes and all this kind of stuff, even though this place is not operational anymore. So, yeah, very cool. And then kind of to get into the most haunted locations, the casting shed. So this is where the molten iron was poured into sand molds. It was also where many of the fatal accidents happened. So people talk a lot about voices shouting warnings, shadow figures pacing the hallway, and a man with a burned face standing near the pouring floor.
Ew.
Yeah. That's not good. Could you imagine just like that shit like sloshing by accident and then hitting you in the face? That would suck. Feeling of dizziness, thought to be from ghostly gas exposure. The area often spikes EMF detectors and produces EVPs. The blower building and powerhouse. So these are massive structures that powered the entire furnace system. They're known for loud phantom footsteps, the sound of metal boots on old grating, door slamming, objects thrown around the floor, and then full body shadow figures on catwalks. The ghost hunters that have been there have said that this building feels busy, like workers are still moving around. The underground tunnel system. So people often report dark figures crawling or crouching. That sounds fucking terrifying. Why the fuck are people crawling or crouching?
So many underground tunnels everywhere.
Everywhere. But the crawling or crouching sounds fucking awful.
Yeah, pretty creepy.
A feeling of being watched from the corners. EVP saying get out or below. And then lights forming and dissolving, and then heavy footsteps behind visitors. And then some paranormal teams refuse to film here because it feels predatory.
Well, so, yeah, that makes sense with the boss guy.
Yeah, but just people like crawling and shit, like that would, if I saw a ghost crawling, that would freak me the fuck out.
Yeah.
There is no reason to crawl as a grown man. How many grown men you've seen crawl this year?
None.
I don't think. Exactly. Yeah. In the past 5 years? Probably none.
Yeah, probably none.
Exactly. There ain't no reason to crawl around as a grown man. So the fact they're crawling in tunnels, no fucking thank you. Boiler rooms. So they're super heated and extremely dangerous during operations. Many accidents happened here as well. So haunts include a tall man with glowing eyes.
So that's fun.
Yeah, or not, while you're there. Hotspot. So hot spots rather than cold spots here. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, but that's crazy because we've never heard about like hot spots and shit like that.
Yeah, but if it's not operational, it's maybe the residual molten shit.
Maybe. A metallic whispering sound and then shadowy arms reaching from behind pipes. So this is the area. This area is the number one location associated with violent encounters. So people like getting touched and shit like that.
Yeah.
That sounds terrifying.
It does.
So, what do you think? I think that gets the full haunted for me.
I'm going to go haunty.
Haunty.
Missing the D.
Why? There's no reason it should be missing the D.
I don't know if anything is ever going to get the full haunted for me because I'm a skeptic.
Yeah, but think about, like, if there's a place, that might be the place that is the most likely to be haunted out of all the places we have covered.
Cemeteries.
I disagree. I think this place even more, dude. Nah. This place sounds fucking awful.
Well, yeah.
People were disintegrating in molten iron. Yeah, and you're telling me they're not left?
No, that's bad. But I still stand by it. I think it's a haunty for me.
I don't know. I think you're out of your fucking mind, dude. People were literally getting disintegrated. Bosses didn't give a shit about you. You go down to the tunnels. There's shadow figures crawling on the fucking ground.
Allegedly.
There's some dude with a burned face there still.
Allegedly.
But you can't, all of those shits actually happened.
Yeah.
Like the crawling on the ground, yeah, we don't know what fucking caused that. But the other ones we know, like, actually fucking happened.
Yeah.
Someone was an asshole boss, didn't care if you died, and then people pushed him in. To molten iron.
I mean, yeah, sounds fucking miserable.
Miserable.
No thank you.
No fucking thank you. That must be just an instant death.
You hope.
You hope.
That's an instant death.
Or your legs just fucking disintegrate.
I mean, there's at least some moments of feeling everything.
Yeah, like a couple seconds.
But I feel like after like 2 seconds, your body probably just like shuts off. It's probably like, nope, we're going into shutdown mode.
I must have been wild to watch. Yeah. You know the guy that pushed him probably was like, oh, fuck. I just pushed. Like he snapped. Like, it wasn't, yeah, like a premeditated thing.
But I also wonder, like, is it anything to watch? Because, like, if you're going face first in, it's not like you're screaming.
No, but you just see so his just body like, disintegrate.
Yeah. Ugh, yeah.
Yeah, that's creepy as fuck, dude.
So, here's a weird question.
What?
Did they keep making the stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
With the body in there?
Probably.
No, no, but like that day.
That batch?
Yeah. Like, do you drain that out and like...
I don't think they drain it, but they probably halt production for like a day.
Yeah, but like, you think they went back to using that same material?
Oh, absolutely. They're not going to waste that whole... So, fucking bad. There is iron somewhere in this country that it has...
Has like, body in it.
Yeah, that has body in it.
That's crazy to
body,
think
yada,
about.
Yada, 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 yada.
I hate that song.
Yeah.
But that's crazy to think about, that, like, there's metal, there's cement, there's, like, just all sorts of building materials that just, like, there's just, like, body in there.
Have body in them.
Yeah.
Body, yada, yada. Why do you hate that song?
It's so annoying.
It's, dude, that's just Meg being Meg, bro.
It's the most annoying song, yeah, that I can probably think of right now.
Oh, man. All right, well, that's getting a full haunted for me.
Just haunty.
I think that place is fucking so scary. I would go. This should be a place that I actually ghost hunt at.
Really?
It's outside. Yeah, partially outside.
It's probably the most violent ghosts that we've ever covered.
So maybe I wouldn't go.
Like, of all the places that I would expect you to be willing to go, this would be the last place I would be willing to go. Well, I would be hesitant to go, not because of the ghosts, but because of the, like, genuine just
dangers
bodily,
that exist
bodily
there.
Harm risk.
Yeah, that's fair.
The tetanus.
That is very fair.
High falls.
Yeah.
You know.
Tetanus and high falls are
creaky
are
metal.
Yeah.
But, yeah. All right, well, that is episode 39 in the books.
Yeah. Next week, international.
Yeah, you guys will have to stay tuned to see where we're going.
I don't speak the language, but that booty don't need explaining. Do, talk dirty to me.
Unless we do speak the language.
Yes. Which, maybe it will be an international place we speak the language.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
Well, Espanol.
Sí, claro.
Claro que sí.
Claro que sí. Yo hablo un poquito. Porque soy un gringo. all right. Well, we will see y'all next week. This was another episode of Spirits on Spirits. Please do the liking, do the subscribing, do the following, do the commenting, and do the interacting. Because we just love to hear from you guys. It makes us happy.
Yeah.
Otherwise, our lives are sucky. They're miserable. We're depressed. We emotionally eat and all this stuff. And if you like and subscribe, we won't do all those things.
We need you guys. We can't live without you.
We can't live without you. Can't live without you. So, all right. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
Stay spooky. Peace.